Maybe church was a part of your childhood, or maybe it's been a while. This season, come home for Christmas at Rock City Church. You'll experience an encouraging message, powerful worship, and moments that remind you of the wonder of the season. It's a chance to slow down, celebrate, and remember what Christmas truly means. Bring your family, invite a friend. Let's make this Christmas one to remember. Find service times, locations, and details at rockcitychurch.tv. We'll see you this Christmas.
At Mount Carmel, every birth is the beginning of something beautiful. So, we bring together compassion and expertise to every pregnancy with a personal touch. The first step to a healthier, happier life. Learn more at mountcarmelforyou.com.
Come and move that in my direction. So thankful for that, it's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of
way. Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Locked In Baseball Podcast. And I'd like to take a moment to kind of welcome in a good friend of mine and former teammate who's, you know, been fortunate enough to be involved in baseball even after his playing days at the highest level in professional baseball. And, you know, he, you know, as a player, he was drafted in the first round back in 2000. He, you know, played, you know, 15. How many years did you play, David?
I played for 15 years. I got up to the AAA level. Played a few years of independent ball as well.
Yeah, so David Espinoza, now, you know, in the scouting world, at the international level as the international scout, the international cross checker with the Cincinnati Reds, the team that drafted him. And you know, thanks David for being with us, and you know, really appreciate you taking the time. You're all the way out there in South Florida, so I know there's a little bit of a time change there. So thanks for, you know, taking the time during your busy days.
Yeah, man, no problem. I would love to talk baseball with you.
Yeah, man. So, and as you know, like I talked to you a little bit, you know, off the record with this about how, you know, we started this podcast so that we can get some information out there for, you know, the players that, you know, that I work with and in the program that I'm involved with over here on the West Coast. But actually, we just, you know, got established in Central Florida, so that's a little bit closer for you if you ever want to run up there and take a look at some guys. You know, the premise of this was so that we can get that, you know, different perspectives of the game. So, you know, our players and the families that were, you know, that are a part of us, they can understand, you know, how big this game actually is. And it goes, you know, far beyond, you know, the weekend, you know, tournaments and events that, you know, showcases that they like to attend. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, I feel like, you know, in the industry of travel baseball and what we're, you know, what we're involved in, it was like we're in like this little bubble. And we don't really have an accurate grasp of reality on what the game's really about sometimes. So it's good to have, you know, the perspective that you could bring to the table. You know, I really respected you as a player and as a teammate, and I had fun with you and learned a lot from you in the few years that we played together. So you know, as an international cross checker with any organization, kind of, if we can kind of touch on that and, you know, what that role really entails, and, you know, what responsibilities you have in that role, with Cincinnati.
Yeah. So this is my first year as an international cross checker. Just so you guys have some background on what I've done. I played for a long time. I played up the AAA. I also played independent ball, and that's where I got to play with Joe, you know, for a couple of years. Obviously we're good friends, and, you know, but anyway, but after I got done playing, I also, got my bachelor's degree in business administration, you know, graduated in 14. And then, after the 2015 season, I got an opportunity to be a professional scout with the Miami Marlins. And, my responsibilities the first year of 16 was actually to cover the independent leagues. along with some minor league baseball and then some major league coverage. You know, the following 3 years, I didn't cover the independent leagues as much. I did, but it was a lot less than my first year. But, you know, I was lucky enough to actually find a player in my first year that became a big league player. And he's a pitcher, and he's still in the big league. He's with the Rays now. His name is Trevor Richards. So, you know, just goes to show you that doesn't matter what round you're drafted in. This kid was undrafted and signed for $0, and he's a big leaguer. But then the following few years, I pretty much covered, the affiliated levels, meaning, you know, anywhere from rookie ball up to the big leagues. It was just like an occasional trip to watch independent league players. And, I did that, in 17, 18, and 19. And in 19, I actually was promoted to be a special assignment scout. So I would go evaluate, prospects for the most part and, really just kind of give my opinion on like the better players in the minor leagues. It's just, you know, occasional major league coverage. And after the 19th season, the Reds, called the Marlins with an opportunity for me. And I've always been interested in learning about other things in professional baseball, and, the international world is, it's very different and it's very difficult because, we're really projecting and we're watching, you know, even as young as 13 years old players. And we got to project on what they would be when they're men at 23, 24, 25 years old. And you can only imagine how difficult that is. But, you know, I knew it was going to be a challenge, and I was up for it, and I took the position. So, you know, I'm an international cross-checker, and my responsibility is just to oversee the area guys on who they like. For instance, like when I go to the Dominican Republic, I'll fly in, I'll tag along with, for instance, the scout that covers Santo Domingo, the capital. And I'll tag along with him for a few days and then, you know, watch some of the players he likes. You know, obviously evaluate them, give my opinion. And you know, I'll do that. But it's not just the Dominican. I'll go to countries like Mexico, I'll go to Colombia, I'll go to Curacao, I'll go to the Bahamas, Aruba, just to name a few. And I haven't done this yet, but at some point I'll be going to Asia as well. But when it comes to my responsibility, a lot of departments have three cross-checkers. We have one cross-checker that his responsibility is the Cuban national team or any of the Cubans that they defect. Or one of our other cross-checkers, he oversees Europe and Australia, as like one of our main responsibilities. And one of my main responsibilities is Mexico. So, when it comes to the other countries, I do still go to the other countries, but like when it comes to Mexico, I'm considered like I'm supposed to be the expert of that country.
You're the god. You're the godfather. You're the godfather there.
Yeah. So I pretty much have to tell my director, yeah, this kid in Mexico, he's definitely someone that I would have high interest in. And if you can, you should go watch him yourself. So it's kind of like a funnel system.
Right.
You know, I see players that the area guys like. You know, there might be some guys that, not that you eliminate them, mm-hmm. but the director, he pretty much makes the decision on the better players. You know, the guys that are getting, potentially getting millions of dollars, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $500 grand, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. He probably won't fly to a place to specifically see a kid that is a $10,000 sign.
Right.
But, you know, not that he won't see them. If he takes a trip to Dominican to see, you know, one of our top targets, there might be like some, you know, kids that sign for a lot less money around also that he'll see. But for instance, like I saw a pitcher in Mexico a couple of years ago that I really like, and which was up to me. I was going to sign the kid on the spot, but I don't make that decision. My boss, who is the director, he does. So obviously, with this pandemic, that plan got put on hold. But eventually, once we're able to go back out to work, then my director will find a way to go see that pitcher I really like in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So now, like me and the other two cross checkers, we all go to the Dominican. We typically have someone in the Dominican at all times. So it's either me, one of the two cross checkers, our director, or the assistant director. So like every week in the Dominican Republic, there's somebody there that makes decisions. So this is the way we do it, and that's what our responsibilities are. You know, for the most part, most of the players we sign are from the Dominican. I can't really tell you the exact percentage, but if I were to guess, if we do have, whenever we do have a signing class of, 8 to 10 players, I'm willing to bet that at least 5 of them are from the Dominican. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be a couple of Venezuelans, there might be one Colombian, there might be a Mexican kid, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's why, because of the Dominican Republic, we kind of always have to have somebody there at all times.
Okay. So, Mike, I think how the value I think that this information can bring for the players and the families that are listening in, they're the primary listeners here, is obviously you played a long time, you've been in scouting for a few years now, and now because you've transitioned from professional baseball, you're covering independent baseball, at least in the States, and then transitioning more on an international level in South and Central America and Mexico. So with the guys, with the players that, that I'm around, mostly at the old, at the oldest, they might be, college level, players, but they're, like I said, we're kind of caught in this bubble where we feel like, the best players in the world come from like travel baseball, That's not always the case, right? So the perspective, obviously, and I try to tell guys, hey, you're not just competing with, the guys from, and these are different travel teams, from the Evo Shield Canes or from the Florida Burn. You're competing with guys from, all over the world. If you want to win a job, it's not going to be, necessarily against your peer group here in the States. You're winning a job against guys that, that have, grown up in third world countries and have had limited resources to improve their game. But, baseball is really kind of all they know a lot of the time. So, just from that regard, just a little experience I like to go through every year with our players. So we take some teams to, you remember the Junior Olympics, those tournaments that USA Baseball holds?
Yeah.
So they host one in Florida now in West Palm, in West Palm. Yeah, they host it in West Palm, and then they host it in the Phoenix, Arizona area every year. And so in Peoria, where the Mariners and the Padres, that's where the spring training facilities are. That's where they that's where USA Baseball also hosts their like combine days. Just kind of their physical and defensive skill assessment days and stuff like that. So I really like going to that because sometimes you'll see, the rookie ball guys out there like taking an in and out or taking batting practice during the same time. And so it's funny because I'll take like a 17-year-old team out there, right? And we're playing in like this, a travel ball tournament, right? But then you also see, the guys on field three, the Mariner, rookie ball guys, and they're the same age, but a lot of them have had like a year or two of pro ball underneath their belt, and a lot of them are from, South America, Dominican Republic, obviously anywhere else that team signed guys from. But there's a humongous gap between how prepared our guys are or they think they are, and really how talented and, you know, that these, you know, these players internationally, you know, where they come from, how good those players are too. You know, we kind of have these blinders on where we think that we're only competing against, you know, draft guys out of high school and college prospects, you know. So, I mean, you're boots on the ground firsthand, you know, in these different countries. You know, the talent level, you know, you were born in Venezuela, right?
I was born in Venezuela.
Yeah, so the talent level there, the talent level in Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Mexico, like what's your perspective on all that? You know, because you've seen guys here too, obviously, you know. I think you're still pretty active with, like, you know, the high school and that you attended, and I think you still, I don't know, are you active at the University of Miami at all? Do you do stuff there? Or?
Yeah, I live in Miami, so I do see a lot of domestic amateurs as well. But I think, okay, let me just put things in perspective. You know, when you compare the domestic kids in general and you compare them to the kids that signed professionally at a young age, I think the biggest takeaway is, wow, these kids are the same age, but man, they are a lot more physical than these kids that are here. And I'll explain why. And I would say the Venezuelans and especially the Dominican players, they're going to be a lot more physical than the domestic kids here. Unfortunately for the Dominican players, they are taken out of school when they're like 13 years old, and they go to these trainers and they live there. It's almost like they have like a mini complex. Might just be like a field with a dorm, and they're training there for like a couple of years before they sign at 16. So all they're doing is practicing, like lifting weights. And that's really all they're doing. They're not even going to school. So when it comes to physicality, they're going to be ahead of the kids here. So that's why I bet you, like, when you were watching the rookie ball or the extended kids that were on that field next to you in Peoria, I bet you one of the things is like, man, these kids are the same age. They look bigger, stronger. Oh, that's normal. That just seems to be, I mean, it's like anything. If you were to take all the kids from the United States out of school, and you just put them somewhere where they're just lifting weights and playing baseball all day, well, you're going to see it physically, you know. Now, am I a fan of that? Well, not necessarily, because I think the United States has an enormous advantage over Dominican players. The good thing about what we do here domestically is the kids are getting education. And they're playing games, and that's how you develop aptitude and instinct. The Dominican players, they don't really play games. They just practice, take BP, run 60s, play defense, and throw the ball as hard as they can. So when you look at how their instincts are compared to the domestic players here, they're actually behind. And some of them significantly behind. Some don't even like know how to run the bases, literally don't know how to run the bases. It's crazy, you know. So granted, I think the other disadvantage that I think has kind of been a trend in general here in the United States is sometimes travel ball is too many games, where you're not even developing the fundamentals. You know, like, hey, maybe you should work on your backhand a little more. Well, it's hard to work on your backhand when you're playing three games a day and you're playing tournaments all the time and there's really almost no practices. So I think you kind of see the two ends of the spectrum there. You know, the Dominican players and the Venezuelans, they kind of use, they're called buscones or trainers. They kind of get developed that way, where they're just hitting and catching ground balls and running the 60 all the time, but they're not playing games. So
why is that? Why don't they? Because I feel like there's enough players down there, right? I could be wrong. There's enough players to put teams together and play some games, right?
it used to be that way. They used to have leagues like we had here. They had rec leagues and kids would play. And kids would go to school. But I don't know what year exactly it happened, but at some point these kids were getting tucked away by these agents slash trainers slash these scones. And, you know, they were just getting paid out of school at 13 years old and they were being trained. And, you know, and then that's actually where, you know, we're starting to see this trend of questionable instinct and aptitude on the field with the Dominican, you know, when you sign them at 16. But then the trend that we're going in is, oh my God, travel ball, you know, way too many games, but not a lot. So, you know, there's got to be a balance, you know? So I think that's where the difference is. I don't necessarily think that one place is better than the other, but I do think that the players here need to be aware that they're not the only players. You know, like you said, there's good players everywhere, you know. And just because they're not from the United States does not mean that they can't go to a university in the United States, you know, and take their spot. And I'll give you an example of a kid. And every country is different. You know how I mentioned the Dominican players tend to be a little more physical? Well, when you're talking about the kids from Curacao, they're actually not very physical. They're almost similar to what we have in the United States. And Curacao, they have leagues and the players have instincts. And shoot, there's a reason why you see them in the Little League World Series a lot. I mean, the kids play there. They're just not as physical as the Dominicans. But a lot of those kids don't end up signing at 16. But these kids are really educated. Well, they speak five languages in Curacao. And a lot of these kids end up going to college here. And I'll give you an example of one that is, I mean, I'm sure people from Southern California know who this is, Andrelton Simmons. Andrelton Simmons, he was not signed as a 16-year-old out of Curacao. He came to school here. He went to, I forgot the name of the school, but it was like in Oklahoma somewhere. I think it was like Western Oklahoma University, something like that. And he ended up being a second-round pick. And, well, he's been a really good major league player.
You know what's
funny? But he's not the only one.
Sorry, let me kind of interrupt. I'm sorry. But, you know, it said, like, Andrelton Simmons came from Curacao, you know, goes to, you know, not a you know, major D1 program in Oklahoma by any means. I don't even know if they are D1. But we have guys in Southern California, by the way. And probably similar to guys in South Florida. Like, guys don't want to leave for some reason in Southern California. And if I were to throw any school in Oklahoma out to the majority of our players in California, they would immediately shake their head and say no. Like, absolutely not. I'm not going there. You know?
No.
But you
should go anywhere where you have an opportunity to get an education. Yeah. And have a chance to play baseball.
Right.
I mean, that's all. You know, if you're a good player, sometimes it's actually good that you leave where you're from. You know, obviously, Andrelton Simmons, you know, whoever saw him as a 16-year-old, you know, they probably thought, oh, he's really underdeveloped. You know, I don't think anybody was saying he was going to be a Gold Glove shortstop that's going to play 10 years in the big league. But, you know, he kept playing. He went to school in Oklahoma. Developed, he had, you know, got better. Obviously, he was a second rounder, so obviously he had to be pretty good. He was a big leaguer. I'll give you another example of a kid on my high school team. Him and Javi Herrera. I mean, it was a long time ago. But, you know, everybody who lives in Miami, they want to go to the University of Miami, and if they don't go to the University of Miami, they're upset, you know. But, you know, in Javi's case, he had a chance to go to the University of Tennessee. Obviously, not near Miami at all. And, you know, once he went there, you know, other scouts got to see him play. And he obviously got an opportunity to play, got a degree. And then he was also a second round pick by the Indians 3 years later. So sometimes leaving where you're from is a good thing. Have a different set of eyes. And just leaving home, you know, I think it's good for their maturity to be on their own. So, and even leaving your state, just because you're from Southern California doesn't mean you have to go to a California school. You know, hey, you might have to go to, I don't know, New Mexico or Arizona. Like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So it's weird though, because, our guys, like we kind of preach the same thing and they don't, there isn't anything wrong with it, but just, you know, the change, I don't know if it's, you know, just being away from home or being away from, you know, the beaches or being away from, you know, their friends and family, you know, it's just it's a hard adjustment for guys to want to make. But the thing is, like, they want to play pro ball, right? So if they have a problem with Oklahoma, right, or I shouldn't even say that because there's probably somebody in Oklahoma is getting pissed as I say this. But if they do have a problem with, like, you know, going to a Midwestern state or somewhere where they're kind of in the middle of nowhere compared to, you know, where they're living at here in Southern California or Miami, you know, if they have a problem with that, they're going to have a real problem with playing in the lower levels of minor league baseball, because that's, you know, those towns are all you're playing at, right? And those types of, you know, that environment is all you're going to, you know, all you're going to experience for a while, you know, until you
move. Exactly. Like I said, I think it's good that, like, obviously, if you're from Southern California and, like, Cal State Fullerton wants you and they're telling you that you're going to be the everyday shortstop, that's a little different. But if there's just not much of an opportunity to play and you have to go somewhere else, I think, especially if you have aspirations to play pro ball one day, it's only going to benefit you to leave, because you're going to be forced to be on your own. And, you know, you might have to go somewhere in the West where it's cold, you know, where it's uncomfortable, but it's only going to help you, you know, in the long run, it's especially from a maturity level, you know, you're going to have to be on your own. It's the same way in pro ball. Like you said, you know, sometimes, you're in a really bad place. And I feel like if you're not forced to be uncomfortable for a while, or if you never are put in that position where you are uncomfortable, when you finally do get uncomfortable, like, you're going to be challenged mentally. I'm not going to throw this guy's name out there, but there's a kid that went to my high school, you know, came from a wealthy family and, you know, went to the high school I went to, which is really the high school for wealthy people, but good sports program, you know, good high school player. You know, he had an opportunity to go to NC State, got to play and, you know, got to play right away. You know, always got, it was really, he was pretty much comfortable the whole time. You know, played every day, was playing a nice program in the ACC. And then he went to go play pro ball his first year in Hagerstown, Maryland, which is a dump. And he literally quit in the middle of the year because he was never really forced to be uncomfortable anywhere, you know? Yeah. So sometimes when you have to go somewhere to play, that may not be where you really envisioned yourself playing, you know, then I don't know. I just think, for instance, like for guys from Miami or Southern California that's always had great weather and awesome facilities, and if you're never put in a position where it's not like that, I think whenever you do get challenged with, like, for instance, going to a minor league city where it's not great, it's going to really, I don't know. I just think it's good to have some adversity, you know, especially when you're young.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's actually when it comes to what I'm doing, one of the things that we try to find out about the players we have interest in is this guy tough? You know, what has he gone through in his life that has kind of forced him to toughen up some, you know? Because when you're trying to sign somebody for $2 million and they got to play professional baseball, like, they got to be tough, you know? You can't be giving someone $2 million that's going to be acquitted,
right?
You know? So, you know, like you said, I think kids need to be open-minded. And if they want to play baseball, they got to go where they have a chance to get a good education and have a chance to play, you know? And if it happens to be in Nebraska and it's cold, well, you know what? I'm going to go to Nebraska. I'm going to tough it out. It's going to be better, you know? So.
Yeah, and that's – I played with you in Nebraska.
Yeah.
I like
Nebraska's it's money.
It's money. I mean, where we were, it was cool. I drove through the rest of Nebraska, and I could see where it's, you know, it's a little different from what I'm comfortable with, but
exactly.
Yeah, but those are really good points, because, you know, I don't think, like, I mean, I was fortunate. Like, I went away from home to go to school, but I went to, you know, a tropical island in the middle of the ocean, so it wasn't the same exact you know, type of uncomfortability, but I was forced to be on my own. You know, I was forced to, you know, as an 18-year-old kid to kind of fend for myself, manage my money, you know, be away from my friends and family that, you know, that I grew up with, and, or friends I grew up with and family, obviously I grew up with them, but, you know, you do feel that, you know, especially when you come back home, you feel like a little bit more accomplished, you know. And then when I did get into the professional side, you know, when I was a player, you know, it was a lot easier to adjust. I can imagine, you know, the guys that, you know, this is their first time away from home. And I understand when you're like 17, 18 years old, you know, and you get drafted out of high school, it is a little bit of a, you know, of a different experience for them. But, you know, as a, you know, 21, 22-year-old signing out of college and going someplace, it was a lot easier adjustment for me, because I was already away from home to begin with. You know, it wasn't like a culture shock, and it wasn't like you just kind of expect, you know, to have to take on more responsibilities in that way. You know, whereas if you decide to stay home to go to college and live at home, and, you know, your parents are still making you breakfast in the morning and, you know, getting your lunch ready and all that stuff, then, you know, it's, you know, you're getting, I don't want to say you're getting coddled, but you're becoming enabled to just kind of stay comfortable, which is a, you know, that can kind of, that can lead to, you know, sabotage in your career down the road. Hey guys, that's it for this episode of the Locked In Podcast. This is part one with international cross checker for the Cincinnati Reds, David Espinoza, who's all the way out in Miami, Florida. He's shed some light on some really good info for international players and how the scouting world works out there, but also how it compares to evaluating talent here in the States. So part two will come up next. We're signing off. So we'll talk to you guys next time. This is how we do it down in Puerto Rico. I just wanna hear you screaming, ay bendito. I can go forever cuando esté contigo. Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Que me enseñes a mi boca tus lugares favoritos. Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Hasta provocar tus gritos. Despacito.